Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, blessed souls, who's going to have the courage and the might to extend their hand to help their brother, man, and sister? Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're configured to stay alive. The intent of Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned into the Blog Talk Radio. We humbly assert this is the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. This is Soul Class 750, Anusim on the Rise, Part 31. Baruch Hashem blesses our eternal creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha. Blessing upon the entire human family experience with creator's help. Our next program is taking place right now on June 28, 2020, starting at 6 o'clock p.m. Holy Land time of Israel, specifically in Jerusalem, corresponding to 11 a.m. live from Turtle Island, equals AKA equals USA Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will focus on being in discussion with Ezra Nusim. Israeli Amuta CEO Yafi Bata DaCosta will share with her thoughts relating to Ezra Lanusim, new funding strategy to further interact with Yafi Bata DaCosta. Connect with her via YAFFBATYA at yahoo.com. To participate immediately, listen to the program. You can call in at 347-838-8669. And may the eternal creator bless and protect you and your loved ones while you take a look at the Ezra Lanusim website, which is BNEIANOUSIM.org. And without further ado, we're going to loan down the music from Mordechai Ben David, Unity, and we're going to bring in our host, who will be carrying the verbal baton today, principally speaking, Yafi Batya DaCosta. Good afternoon, Yafi Batya.
Yes, hi, Dawn. Good morning to you. How's everything going in Turtle City?
Well, Turtle City is part of Turtle Island. I call it the Brooklyn Boiler Room.
Oh,
otherwise, where I live.
There you go.
Well, I live on the more elevated, you know, geographically speaking, of Crown Heights. So I consider myself living in the Golan Heights section of Crown Heights. It's hot. It's sticky. This is Brooklyn Boiler Weather Room. But hey, it's okay. We're alive and we're staying alive in these matters. So we're proceeding, hopefully, in a positive fashion. Yafibatia, I know that the Bnei Anusim, the Bnei Yisrael, the Bnei Noach, all the 7.7 billion human beings around this creation at this time are seeking soulful revelation, gleaming and screaming because they want justice, they want peace, they want all these good things. But the advice that was once given to a now a elderly rabbi, who is still alive, thank God, Rabbi Michael Paley, was advice given to him, and I'd like to share this story by the Lubavitcher Rebbe to him, and I think this is a message to the universal application. Again, to the three categories, which really one part of the entire human family experience, the Bnei Yisrael, Bnei Nusim, Bnei Noach. And here it goes. Although I always intended to become a rabbi one day, when I went to college, I decided to major in physics instead of theology or philosophy. I made that decision because a professor at Brandeis University, where I was enrolled, the famed Alexander Altman, had asked me what questions I wanted to answer through my studies. I said, I want to understand the universe. And he responded, well, then you want to study physics. I protested, no, I want to study mysticism. His rejoinder was, oh, I thought you were serious. I did want to be serious, and so I took up the study of physics because I thought I'd be a better rabbi because of it, because I would have a serious background. However, in 1973, I was 21 and about to graduate. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I experienced a crisis in faith. As a result, I lost my ability to concentrate during prayers, which had always been my mainstay. Concentration in prayers was very important to me then and remains very important to me today. But at this particular time, I was leaving the familiar environment of the university, and I was fearful about the environment, which affected my faith. So I went to my spiritual mentor, Reb Zalman Schachter. I think he was associated with Yeshiva University, and confided my problem. In response, you should come to New York with me and meet the Rebbe. I took his advice and joined him for prayers at the Chabad headquarters the following week. I didn't get to see the Rebbe in private audience. I just got to meet him in the hallway as he was leaving his office. But that encounter was most memorable. In fact, it changed me forever. As we were standing there, the Rebbe came directly over to me, and I was startled by his piercing blue eyes and the intensity of personality. Without any preamble, he asked me, do you think that protons decay? He didn't inquire who I was, nor where or what I studied. Reb Zalman later said he never told the Rebbe anything about me, yet that he was asking me questions about physics. He continued, why do neutrinos spin in a counterclockwise direction? I answered him in monosyllables. He must have known that I was able to provide the answers, but the questions were not simple. He made me think, and he threw the questions at me with tremendous velocity, so I had to think quickly. It was remarkable how he tailored the questions to my level of knowledge, at the same time, too, putting me at ease and yet opening my mind. At the end, he said, and this is the instruction I want to share with everyone, Yafabati, and everyone listening, go back to the university and make sure that everything you study takes you to God. See God in all that you learn. If you don't, then search harder. But make sure that you only focus on the things that take you to God. In the end, Rabbi Daly mentions that modern physics teaches that at the ultimate velocity, time stands still and there's only the present moment. And I learned this when I was 18 years old on a book on fear and death and dying by Rabbi Robert J. Lifton, I think it was Yale University. He talked about the idea of experiential transcendence. Why do people go to movies or sporting events or, say, like music concerts, performances? Because in that moment, they seem to be going out of the limited tick-tock of time, and they go to above it. So why I want to share that, everybody, is because I know that there must be frustration, not just because of the pandemic on the part of B'nai Anusim, but they're going about their daily endeavors, and they're waiting for that epiphany-like moment, or experience it at a lower level, and are seeking the higher level of epiphany. But the Rebbe's, I think, answer is crystal clear. Seek out Creator. Seek out God in whatever you're doing, and you're going to find the Creator. You take on these matters.
Oh, absolutely. Seeking you shall find. I don't know where that comes from, but it's absolutely true. Especially if we ask God to help us in that search for Him. That, I think, is the most important part, because He absolutely will, no matter what direction we come at it from. The end point is always to find Him, because that's what He also wants, is for us to find Him. That's why we're here. So
right.
It's absolutely true, and it's a wonderful thought.
Right. One more thing I'd like to share with you, Afibati, and those of us who are listening around the world. By the way, Afibati, I was looking at the demographics of our listening audience. America still remains our number one listener, followed by France. And unfortunately, because I haven't been doing as many programs lately, we've had a little bit of drop off in participation or listeners from South America and Mexico, but hopefully through today's show we'll rebuild it. But actually, we've been getting a surprising amount of listeners from what I call the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jamaica, where I'm sure there is some Anusim through marriages and Jamaica is not that far from South America, it's not that far from Central America, it's not that far from Mexico. So I'm sure we might find one or two of B'nai Anusim also in Jamaica. So those who are listening out there, we send you a hearty greetings. But one more thing, Ephraim, before we turn the verbal baton to you, is that in last week's Torah portion, there was mamish, almost a civil war within the tribe of Levites until Hashem quelled it down with a tremendous miracle. Korach, the cousin of Moshe and Aaron, Moses and Aaron, did not think that the older brother Moses was privy to become the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, and he felt that he, with his own lineage, just the same family, he should be the Kohen Gadol, because he saw, because he did have levels of Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, he saw that Samuel the prophet, who would eventually anoint the first two kings of Israel, Saul, and David, King David. So he figured, I'm not going to lose this competition, and after all, it's just a brother appointing a brother. But what Korach didn't realize is that Moshe didn't do anything. Moses didn't do anything except by the commandments of the Creator. And what happened was, after Korach and his congregation, 250 of them, went down, some of them were swallowed openly by the earth, and others were burnt by a divine fire, then the other people were associating all those deaths with a negative outcome from one of the most pristine services in the tabernacle and in the temple, which is the burning of incense. So it's something that the majority of the masses of the Israelite, the 12 tribes of Israel, cannot see, whether the Kohanim, the priestly branch, are burning the incense very close to the Holy of Holies or in the Holy Temple. So the first Chabad Rebbe, Shneur Zalman, which, by the way, Shneur is a interpretation of the word senior, and I think Zalman, I think once heard, is connected to the Spanish interpretation of the word Solomon. So, and the Rebbe said that the blood of Spain flowed through his veins. So the first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, writes that in our individual service, because Hashem asked us to make a sanctuary for him, and he will dwell within in us, but this is an instruction for each and every human being, and the service of burning the incense to Hashem is our thought process. The people that thought negative thoughts against Moses and Aaron, they perished because their actions were negative. The people who thought positive thoughts on the side of Moses lived, and the burning of the incense is giving us instruction, because when you have a thought, I have a thought, no one can read our thoughts. I mean, maybe the mystics can, or the big tzaddikim, Hashem can read our thoughts. But these thoughts are the antecedents for our speech and for our action. So therefore, we're hoping that the words that you will be emitting today, Yafabat, will be like a sweet incense before Hashem, to arouse the thought process of those who are listening all around the world to do what they can to help you in your efforts with Ezet Lanusim Amuta.
Oh, that's great, Don. That's great. Thank you so much. By the way, when I was studying last week the Parsha Korach, and I put this out to my leadership team also, there was an article on the Chabad website about Korach and that rebellion. And it's interesting. It talked about the tale of two wives and how Korach's wife kind of incited him to go against Moshe Rabbeinu. But the wife of this man named On of Pelet, okay, he had made a commitment to be a part of that rebellion, and his wife told him not to. She gave him food and drink, and he fell asleep. And then she went outside at the entrance to their tent, took off her hair covering, and was combing her hair when the men came to get him to join in that rebellion. Of course, they ran away. So she saved her husband and her house. But the wife of Korach didn't save her husband or her house. And women have this power, this ability to influence their husbands in one direction or the other. So we also need to be very careful, you know, of what we say and what we do. And of course, it all starts with how we think about things, just like you said, because we really do have power to influence, especially our husbands. And again, we need to make sure that we're influencing them in the right direction, of course.
Yes, yes. So we last were together on the program a month ago. So what has transpired from last month to this month, Yafabatia?
Well, there's an awful lot of exciting things going on. First of all, we have two nonprofits now, and I've been building on the infrastructure, especially of the second one, which is relatively new. So we have a nonprofit in Israel called Ezra La'anusim, and then we have a second nonprofit in the United States called Friends of B'nai Anusim. And a week or a week and a half ago, the bank account was finally opened because that branch of that bank had been closed because of the COVID restrictions and everything that's been going on the past few months. But it finally got opened, and we were granted another $5,000. And this amount of money we're going to spend in the emerging communities of Central America, which are in Honduras, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and Nicaragua. Okay, we're going to be buying them some books and some other things. So that was also very good news. That check, although actually it came in two checks, are being deposited this week. So we have the infrastructure for these two organizations almost complete. We're like 95% there. We filed the application with the IRS for tax-exempt status of that U.S. nonprofit, and we heard back from the IRS last Friday, and I just answered them also. They asked for one piece of information that we didn't have in the application, so that's good. If they only asked for one thing, you know, that means everything, all the other information that we provided to them was okay, because otherwise they would have, you know, either asked for more in those other areas or they would have pushed back or whatever. So they only asked for one additional piece of information, which is a very good sign. And this is a process called moving towards your golden letter. And the golden letter is a letter from the IRS saying that your tax-exempt status has been approved, okay? So we've been working on that. And so now my priorities are shifting big time, okay, to focus, like, really 100% on the fundraising, okay? And now that we have this bank account, by the way, we can reopen a GoFundMe account, which is a really important thing for us to do. We had several people donating to us before, individual people, okay, not organizations, not foundations, whatever. But they had to close that account. So now that we have the situation resolved of what GoFundMe didn't like the last time, we'll be able to open a GoFundMe account again, only for this new bank account, for this Friends of B'nai Anusim organization in the U.S. So that's really good news. So that's the next thing we're going to do for that. And then some other news, we've joined an organization in the U.S. called Combat Antisemitism. It's a large conglomeration of multiple organizations. I think they have like 230 partners right now, okay, and we're one also. And so they do all kinds of things to fight anti-Semitism, and of course we do as well. They were so excited to hear about our approach to fighting anti-Semitism, which of course, as you know, Don, and most of our listeners know, the way we're fighting anti-Semitism is to help the victims and the descendants of the victims of anti-Semitism of 500 years ago of the Inquisitions under the Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church in Spain and Portugal. Okay, that's how we fight anti-Semitism. It goes along with the military concept of no soldier left behind. Okay? So our version of that is no Jewish soul left behind.
Amen.
And of all these people who want to come back openly and publicly, who were raised in families of what are called crypto-Jews or secret Jews, okay, that's what the names were, and those people who want to come back openly and publicly to Judaism, and all they need is to have their Jewish identity confirmed by an authoritative entity within the Jewish world, which happens to be baked in. Okay? So that's why we do what we do. And when this organization called Combat Antisemitism heard about us and what we're doing, they were not just intrigued. I mean, they were like blown away. They'd never heard of this before. They never knew, okay, or heard of the B'nai Seim, that there's this movement of people who are trying to come back from this amount and this many years and generations of persecution of the Jewish people. And, of course, our people are Sephardi. So they were so excited and so thrilled to have us join their organization. They're going to promote our work. I'm hoping it's a lot of good things that are going to come out of it. It's amazing.
Beautiful. Well, I think that, you know, a snowball starts as a very tiny particle of snow. And it has to kind of like, it has to kind of like melt a little bit, become a little sticky. And then it connects to other snow, you know, pieces of snow. And there has to be, of course, someone who can manipulate and, you know, turn it into like, you know, you're molding clay. So I think the Almighty has gotten together your some spiritual snowflakes, and they're starting to, you know, and of course, the, you know, we say in Rosh Hashanah, Hashem is likened to the, you know, like the person making the clay pot. He wants to build it, he'll build it. Wants to smash it, he can smash it. But I think this, the smashing now is the smashing of the stigmatism and the pain of 500 years for B'nai Nusim. And the building is, as now you're seeing, is it's starting to develop, you know, the trickling momentum. As I like to give an allegory, I think I've mentioned this more than one occasion because it's so fascinating. Anyone who's been to New York City sees the Hudson River, which leads to the Hudson Bay, which leads to the Atlantic Ocean. But I took a train down the coast of upper, you know, upstate New York, starting in Albany, and I actually saw the beginning of the Hudson River. It's a very quiet, seemingly overly static body of water, but as you go 10 miles, 20 miles, the brook or the lake, whatever you want to call it, the marshy area starts to expand and expand. And little by little, you get to, like, you see it becomes a burgeoning, you know, river with waves crashing upon the shore. Then you pass the Tappan Zee Bridge. Then you go to the George Washington Bridge. And you go down to the southern part of the southern seaport of New York City, and, you know, the waters begin to become salty, and there could be salt water. So I think this is what's going on now, that you've been working so hard to break through to get to the Mayan, the wellspring of this ongoing movement. Now you're starting to see that it's all downhill in the positive sense.
Yeah, with the rolling stone, or if you will, with the snowball that gathers, you know, more and more snow particles. Absolutely, absolutely. It's all downhill from here, as some people might say. But the big news, there's two more pieces of news that are both huge. So I also came to know about a new, relatively new organization, okay, that's called the 70 Nations International, okay?
Uh-huh.
And their focus is on fighting injustice and in promoting the B'nai Noach movement. And, you know, I have a background with the B'nai Noach as well, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to find out about this woman, who, and these are both women, by the way, who head up these organizations. This woman who heads up an organization called Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. Okay? And I've been in conversation with both of them over the last few weeks, and we are so on the same page, it's not even funny. And it goes back to this quote, a very, very powerful quote from Ecclesiastes, chapter 1, verse 9, that says, "What has been will be again." In other words, history repeats itself.
Right.
And I think at the end of that verse is the famous, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Okay?
Right.
So what we're working on, our three organizations are going to work together.
Wow.
On developing an advocacy skills development program. We're going to be teaching people what advocacy is all about. And in the context of advocacy for Israel and for the Jewish people in general, okay? But also, there's going to be a portion or a module of this development program that's going to teach people about what was really going on in the first century. Because, and I've been doing a lot of studies about this over the past 2 months, and I used to study this before as well. So let me just give your audience, our audience, the summary form of this module.
Can I ask you a question? The name of this organization again, because I want to look it up as you're talking. What is it called again?
It's called Proclaiming Justice Among the Nations. And the entity, the website is PJTN, Proclaiming
PJTN.
Justice to the Nations, PJTN.org.
Okay.
And I don't think I have the website yet for 70 Nations International, but they'll, I'm sure, have their website up pretty soon. Okay?
Right.
Now, Proclaiming Justice Among the Nations, by the way, is a Christian organization that fights anti-Semitism, Christian anti-Semitism, and fights what's called replacement theology. Okay?
Beautiful.
Now,
beautiful.
Replacement theology came into existence in the second century. It did not exist in the first century of the Common Era. So what was it in the first century, and how did it transition from what it was in the first century to what it became in the second century and later? Okay, and this is an important thing that most people, and including many Christians, have never heard and don't understand. In the first century, there was a Jewish sect called the Nazarenes.
Right.
And the leader was the Galilean. Okay, the man from Galilee. He was born in Nazareth, but the sect was called Nazarenes. And then there was a Jewish Roman citizen, Saul of Tarsus, who's also
right.
called Paul.
Right.
And he took that message of the Nazarene sect of Jews to the Gentiles. As a matter of fact, the first place where his followers were called Christians was in Antioch, which is in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey today. Okay? They
right.
weren't called that in the land of Israel, which we have today. Okay? But the sect of the Nazarenes was in the land. And it started out, yes, he believed he was a messianic figure, okay?
Yes.
But then he died, as you know. And like Shabbatai Zvi and other so-called failed messiahs, he failed
right.
to fulfill the prophecies about what the king messiah at the end of days will do. Okay, that's why
right.
the Jewish people are still waiting for that entity. But in the first century, he had that vision that that was who he was, and his followers believe that as well. Then Paul takes it to the Gentiles, to the pagan Gentiles in Asia Minor, not just Antioch, but Ephesus and all these other places, and he wrote letters to these congregations, okay, of people. And what was he bringing to them, Dawn? He was bringing to them the Jewish understanding of the Creator, the one God of the universe. And when he got into trouble with the leaders in Jerusalem of the Nazarene movement for what he was doing, okay, because he wasn't requiring them to convert to Judaism.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to Jerusalem. This is talked about in the book of Acts. He goes to Jerusalem and he presents to the leaders there what he was doing and why he wasn't telling these pagan Gentiles they had to convert and become a Jew. And they agreed with him, and they said, okay, so only ask them to not eat meat sacrificed to idols and a few other things. And if you compare the ruling of what's called the Jerusalem Council with the Noahide laws, it lines up directly.
Right.
In other words, it was a Noahide movement in the first century.
Mm-hmm.
It got changed later in the second century. It got hijacked, essentially. And the so-called church fathers, Tertullian, and a whole bunch of others, which I won't go into all the details here because it's too long. But this is what I'm going to be presenting. Me and these two ladies are going to work on it. We're going to be presenting this model about how the Nazarene sect of Jews in Jerusalem and these people who were following the Jewish understanding of God and trying to bring it out to the pagans, because, you see, when that Mashiach comes, whoever he is, He's a
right.
redeemer for the whole world, not just for the Jews.
That's right.
And the
That's
whole
right.
world is going to have to accept the basic moral code that was given to all mankind. That's why they went out in Asia Minor to talk to the pagan Gentiles to bring them in, meaning bring them into the understanding of the one God of Israel, of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? This is what Christianity doesn't understand. And what happened in the second century, and I can tell you exactly when it happened, and we'll talk in the module about why it happened, and I understand why, they created something different, but calling it by the same name. And ultimately, in the 4th century, 325 of the Common Era, the Council of Nicaea, they locked on to this concept of the Trinity, which the people in the 1st century, the Nazarene Jews, and Paul and his followers never had that idea, never
right.
considered that or were teaching that at all. That happened 3 centuries later. So it was hijacked.
Yeah, that
okay?
is, I've heard.
Most
I've
people
heard this
don't
before,
know this.
Yeah. I've heard this before, and also I think there's certain innuendos which are subliminally inserted into what people would call the New Testament. Of course, we don't hold by the New Testament as Jewish people. That there are statements
right.
made that are just so insidiously anti-Semitic to arouse the masses. Which, by the way, if I understand correctly, maybe you can. I'm sure you know better than I historically. The masses of the English-speaking peoples didn't really get access to the Bible until, like, what, 300-400 years ago when they started making, started translating the Latin liturgical songs into English, I guess into King's English, and then eventually you had the translation of the Bible into English. So basically the people were in the hands or the manipulative hands of the church with the priests who would just cut and paste statements and just arouse the ire of the masses to carry out the atrocities that were carried out for the past almost 2,000 years, including the B'nai Nusin.
Well, here's the thing, what happened. The oldest copy of those writings is called Sinaiticus. It's a whole document that was found in the Sinai. So it's called the Sinaiticus, Codex Sinaiticus. But
mm-hmm.
prior to that, there were all kinds of manuscripts, and the scribes would copy them. And if
right.
there was a difference between one manuscript and another, they would choose which one to copy. And they would blend different manuscripts together that weren't authored by the same person. There was a lot of that stuff going on until finally you end up with Codex Sinaiticus, which is the only oldest copy, the complete copy of those writings that exist in the world. So really, people don't even know what existed in those few hundred years, aside from the writings of the so-called church fathers like Tertullian and other people, and how totally anti-Semitic they were. They hated the Jews so much, okay?
Right.
But there are a lot of scholars, and I'm talking about Christian scholars, who today say, well, this verse was added later, and that idea was never a part of the early church, okay, called
right.
church, but ecclesia, which is the Greek word for congregation. In Hebrew, we call it kahal, okay? So in the early part of this movement, these ideas did not exist, and the anti-Semitism did not exist either. Those all came later because of the early church fathers and how much they hated the Jews. And there are reasons why they hated the Jews, and I'll tell you why. The Romans hated the Jews. And this is the Roman Empire we're talking about. Asia Minor was a part of the Roman Empire of that day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why did they hate the Jews so much? Because the Jewish people refused to bow down to the emperor of Rome and burn incense to him. You talk about incense and burning incense. They refused to do any act like that towards a human being as if that human being were God. And the early movement of the Nazarenes and the so-called Christians of that time in the first century were thrown to the lion, were put out in the amphitheaters of Rome to fight the lions, okay, for the pleasure
right.
and the entertainment of the Romans watching. Why? Because they were sentenced to death that way. Why? Because they refused to bow down to the emperor and burn incense to the Roman emperor. That was why.
You know what this reminds me of? When Abraham refused to bow down before the mighty, the first, like, world leader, Nimrod. I mean, I don't think it was a matter of him burning incense, but he was asked to bow down, and that would be acknowledgement of Nimrod being a god. He said, no, you're not a god. You are the son of Cush, the son of Ham, the son of Noah. So he was a Ben Noah confronting a Ben Noah. That was so delicious, that historical portrayal you just provided for us. And I'm using the language of Rabbi Tovia Singer. I'm sure you're aware of him. You know, when he likes something, he calls it delicious.
Yeah.
That was a delicious presentation. Everybody, I hope the rabbi won't mind me using his expression. Everybody, I just want to, I have to ask, for the sake of truth, because the organization PJTN, I'm assuming that you did your research that, you know, they're not involved in any sort of, you know, they're making alliances with Israel or Jewish people in order to ultimately, you know, trying to get them covertly to convert. I mean, I'm sure you vetted them. That's true?
Oh, absolutely, I vetted them. I've talked to Lori Cardoza Moore on many, many occasions, okay? She is as true and authentic about helping the people of Christianity understand what I just explained and fighting replacement theology as I am, okay?
Beautiful.
So there are very few like her. Trust me, there are very few. But I think we can increase the numbers of people who understand this history if we will explain to them and give them the sources of information that they need, that they can look up. Don, this is all over the internet, okay? It's there for people if they want to imbibe. You know, it's like going to a bar and you've got all these bottles of all kinds of drinks, you know, and you can choose whatever you want. So when we create this module, and she's with us, when we create this module, we're going to give people these sources, and they can look them up for themselves. This is not just going to be Yaffa talking or Meira, who's the lady with 70 Nations International, or Lori. It's not just going to be us. We're going to put it together in a structure that makes it easy to give over in a workshop or a seminar, whatever you want to call it. And then these people are going to use this information with their advocacy, with their activism on behalf of the Jewish world, on behalf of Israel, and on behalf of truth. Why should people continue to be duped, okay, by this false teaching called replacement theology? It was not a part of the first century, and it came later. And I'll tell you why. It got developed. I'll give you the bottom line, as we say, okay? The bottom line is it came about because of one of the Noahide laws that these people violated, and it's called do not steal or theft. Now, let me read something to you that we read in our Siddur, okay? We talk about the splitting of the sea, okay, and what happened with the Egyptians, who followed the Israelites. The Israelites had already gotten to the other shore. Now we have the Egyptians following them, and the waters are still like walls, okay? Mm-hmm. But then the walls come down, the walls of water come down and drown the Egyptians. But in that section of the Siddur, and of course this is in the Torah, it says this, the enemy boasted, I will pursue, I will overtake them. I will divide the spoils.
Mm-hmm.
I will gorge myself on them. I will draw my sword, and my hand will destroy them. Now, that word spoils, okay, means I'm going to steal their possessions. I'm going to conquer them, right? I'm going to kill them all. But everything that they own, the gold, the silver, any precious objects that they have, I'm going to take. Well, that's theft. And the Egyptians aren't the only ones who did this. The Babylonians did it when they destroyed the temple.
Right.
The Persians did it. The Greeks did it. The Romans did it. Okay?
Yep.
The Spanish and Portuguese had it done to them by the church. Do you know the majority of this persecution of the Sephardi Jews who remained in Spain and those who were in Portugal, okay, it was about confiscation of property. That's what
right.
the Inquisition was about.
Right.
They wanted
right.
their property. It happened during the time of the Nazis in Germany
yep.
and the rest of Europe. Okay, that was the real cause of why they went after the Jews. I mean, they killed other people as well. They killed black people, African-American people. They killed gypsies. They killed people who were infirm and had diseases and stuff. So they killed other people as well. But why were they so much after the Jews? Because they wanted the spoils. They wanted to have this thing called taking from them what they owned. Okay, and today in Israel, when we have Messianic people, so-called Messianic Jews, which are really Christians who happen
right.
to have been born
right.
Jewish, but they accept all these lies and distortions and misunderstandings of the text, okay, what are they after? What's the church after today in inciting these people
yes.
to try to convert
yes.
Jews in Israel? What are they after? They're after the tithe. Because the tithe given to the church helps to build
right.
the church financially.
Okay?
Right. It's always been about this. And it will always be about this. But it's not about the truth. And so what we want to do is we want to present this information so that people can understand what really went on in the first century, how it changed, why it changed, how it changed, who changed it, who's responsible for this concept of replacement theology that says the church replaced Israel. God is done with Israel, they say.
Right.
Oh, are they wrong? But
well, you know who agrees with you,
Yakubatia?
Rambam.
What?
In the Rambam, Maimonides, Rav Moshe HaSfardi, he writes in the Laws of Kings and Their Wars, in the last section of Mishneh Torah, he talks about replacement theology, that our,
right.
our spiritual counterparts, the Christians and Muslims, have tried to employ, and he gives different types of reasons. So we have to about to say, at the end of the day, you think it's worth my while to reach out to proclaiming justice to the nations? Perhaps I can do a radio show with them as well. We can cross-pollinate our audiences.
Right, right, Exactly. We will do that. But the point is, we have people in our organizations, the three of us, and these three organizations, and we're going to reach out to other organizations as well, of people who would love to lend a hand, to tell the truth, to provide
yes.
truth to people with through activism, through advocacy. But they don't have the skills, the basic advocacy skills, and they don't have
right.
the content to share. And I mean at a high level and not getting into too much of the gory details. But if people want more of the details, these folks who go to our workshop, our seminar, will have these
Beautiful.
Websites that they can give people, refer them to this information all over the Internet. So I'm very, very excited about this program. We already have the proposal put together for us to get funded for it, and it's just
Beautiful.
Very, very exciting. Now, let me tell you the last part, which is so exciting.
Can I just ask you one question? The other organization
yeah.
again, because it's just so much information. I need to catch up. What is the how could I hook up to the website of the other organization?
Well, the
talking?
Other one, I don't have their website. It's called 70 Nations International. Okay,
70.
Maybe by next week I'll have a website for you. And we'll talk about it some more next week, okay?
Okay.
But it's very,
okay.
very exciting because if people only knew what happened between the first century and the second century, it would clear up a lot of things. The cloud would go away, you know, and
right.
the confusion would go away for a lot of people, including many Christians who
yes.
who aren't against Israel, but they don't know how to deal with the Christians who are anti-Semitic and are against Israel. They don't know how to combat it. Okay, so again, this is all in the context of combating anti-Semitism, because I'm convinced, and many others too, not just me, that the root cause of anti-Semitism is this thing called replacement theology, which
yes.
did not exist in the first century and was created in the second century. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Excuse me for interrupting you with that question. Okay, please go on. You were, before I sidetracked you with that
okay,
question about
so
the other.
Okay, so the last thing is, And because there are so many people who aren't familiar with, again, going back to the beginning of the theme, our history and the history of our movement and the fact that there is even a movement to help the Benning Seam, I decided to go back to work, okay, to raise money for this cause, but to combine it with health and nutrition, because you know, Dawn, and we've talked about this many times, I'm a big, big, huge nut on health and nutrition, okay? And in particular, with this COVID thing that we've just been through, and in some places we're still going through it, there's important information that people do not understand about deficiencies of vital nutrients that they have to have in their body. And if they don't have in their body, they're going to be much more prone not only to catching this coronavirus, but to becoming much more sick from it, even dangerously sick. For example, I read an article a few weeks ago that said 100%, which is a phenomenal number. Anytime you have a statistic that says 100%, that should get people's attention. They wrote in this article that 100% of the people who contracted the coronavirus and were in an ICU on a ventilator, 100% of them were deficient in vitamin D. Now, vitamin D is not that hard of a vitamin, even through food, okay, to have sufficiency in the body, because it promotes the immune system, promotes a strong immune system, along with other certain nutrients. So, again, I'm not going to go into all the details of all this.
Right.
But vitamin D is very important, and a lot of people who are deficient don't even know they're deficient, and they should know if they're deficient. It's a very simple blood test. When people take a blood test to see what their cholesterol level is, their triglycerides, anything else they're looking for in the blood, their glucose level, if they're diabetic. Now, the media has said, to their credit, other people who are at greater risk are people who are obese because of the complication in the lungs, people who are diabetic because diabetes is a disease of inflammation, and inflammation also draws down the immune system. I mean, Dawn, I can go on and on, but in any event, let me get back to the point. There's a company that I found that sells products in the health and nutrition arena. And their products, the majority of their products, are based on active aloe vera. Now, a lot of people remember the aloe vera plant. Okay, it's very popular in southern parts of the United States, especially in Florida. If you go to Florida, okay, and you're laying out in the sun, and you happen to be out there too long and you get a sunburn, you just take a leaf off the aloe vera plant, you slice it down the leaf, and there's gel inside.
That's right.
And you put that gel, and there's aloe vera plants all over Florida, and you put that gel on your sunburn, and it heals it very, very quickly. So what this company has done, and by the way, they've existed since 1978. They're not that new. And they are now in 154 countries around the world. So they have these products called Active Aloe Vera, which is highly absorbable in the body. And then they combine, and you can drink it. There's a drink that they have. There's oils. There's lotion. There's all kinds of products, okay? But then they also combine the aloe vera with vitamin D or vitamin C. Or for people with arthritis, they have a product of aloe vera and chondroitin and glucosamine, which fight the problem that people have with their joints, okay, like pain in their knees from arthritis or in their hands, whatever. And why? Because now those nutrients combined with aloe vera are also much higher level of absorption, because the aloe vera has a higher level of absorption. Okay, I fell in love with this company. Okay, so I'm going to be marketing their products, and it's a double hit, because a double hit meaning I'm helping people who need the help, who would rather have a product from natural sources rather than take synthetic drugs from the pharmaceutical companies. That's our choice today. We can go with natural products or we can go with pharmaceutical drugs. Okay,
that's
and everybody
right.
has his choice. But there are a lot of people today, if they only knew about these products, would love to try them. And there's two things I love about this company. if somebody doesn't like a product or doesn't work for them, there's a 100% money-back guarantee. And I think that's very honorable of the company, that if it doesn't work, they'll give the people their money back. Okay?
That's a big
I like
chance.
That
that's
a lot.
That's a big risk. That's a big risk.
Well, if they really believe in their product, they don't think it's much of a risk.
Right.
That's the whole
true.
Point.
That's true.
Okay?
True.
And then the other part of it is if a person wants to be in this business to sell this product, okay, it's also 100% money-back guarantee of the deposit. In other words, the person has to buy upfront a certain number of products so they can try them themselves, they can utilize them themselves, and have their own experience of the product. And it's not a lot of money, by the way, either. It's a couple of $100s or something like that. But if within the first year of the person doing this, if they want to do it as a business, but it has to be before the first year is out, they also would get that deposit back, 100% guaranteed. Okay?
Wow.
Those two things combined really told me the company has that much confidence in their products that they're going to be helpful to people that said, that's the kind of company I want to be with. So what I'm going to do is any money that I make from commissions from marketing these products is going to go into our bank account for Friends of Banana Seam in the United States. In other
Beautiful.
Words, it's going to be a straight deposit to that account so I can use that money for our projects and programs, okay, as well as the money we get in from donations, as well as the money we get from foundations and all the other stuff we're doing, because we need a lot of funding to help these people. We have hundreds of people, Don, that we're working with to get to Beit Din to resolve their Jewish identity status and ultimately to get them to Israel here. So we do need a lot of funding, but hopefully there's a lot of different avenues and vehicles, you know, for us to get that funding without putting anybody out, you know, in terms of, you know, it's too much of a burden on any one person or one foundation, so we want to spread it around.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Could you please send me, after the program, could you send me a link for this company? I'd like to look into it myself.
Yes, I will. Yes, I absolutely will. I have a neighbor, for example, who suffers with arthritis. As soon as I get delivery on these products, I'm going to give her a bottle of the aloe vera juice with a glucosamine and chondroitin, is how I think you say those two things, and have her try it and see, you know, if it works for her, because they swear that it really helps people with arthritis because it deals with a deficiency. And that's a lot of what the health and nutrition environment, the whole health and nutrition movement is all about, is that sickness comes to us because we're deficient in some kind of nutrient, vitamin or nutrient, and we're not getting enough of it through food, okay, or maybe we're not even eating the foods that would provide it. Again, unbeknownst to us, a lot of this is just lack of education, lack of knowledge, okay?
Right.
And if we're not getting enough of it through food, we can take it in supplement form, some kind of a supplement. But many people don't know this. And again, all these supplements and things and food, of course, is also natural. So it's much healthier with much less side effects, including some pretty severe side effects in some cases from the synthetic drugs that try to mimic what these nutrients, these vital and essential vitamins and nutrients do. Okay, this is why I'm so high on this whole movement, you know, because it's better for people, it's healthier for them, and it's more natural so they don't have to deal with the synthetics.
Beautiful. If I can just share, I mean, I think you'll be happy to hear, I used to drink 5, 6, maybe 7 cups of coffee a day. I've reduced myself down to 2 cups. So you might ask yourself, Don, what are you using as a substitute? So I'm taking water and I'm pouring chia seeds into it, and I add a little bit of apple juice or grape juice, but not so much, like maybe an ounce or two to like a quart of chia seed and water, and that becomes my power drink. That's my there's a popular product here in America called vitamin water. So this has become my vitamin water, and chia seed is so full of minerals and has proteins, and it has it's very high fiber, and this is really energizing me, as well as I continue to take a lot of turmeric and cayenne pepper, all these anti-inflammatory foods, which more naturally oriented health practitioners are promoting, because when we get into the integrating toward that anti-inflammatory foods and spices, that we basically put up a good guard up against the corona or any type of ailments that could be floating around all over the creation.
Exactly, exactly so. Now, what Pankos and I do every day or most days is we take almond milk, okay?
Right, yes.
And we put in it a table to a tablespoon and a half of chia seed, and also a table to a table and a half, tablespoon and a half of flaxseed, both of which, now flaxseed is not only fiber, but it also has omega-3, okay?
Yes.
So those two seeds we put in, we let it sit for half an hour, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, whatever, stirring it every once in a while. And then I add some probiotic powder to it. So we're getting the probiotics, and I do other ways of getting probiotics in this, okay? And we do that every day, and our drinks are, I have one cup of coffee, I'm down to one cup of coffee in the morning, okay?
Beautiful.
And the rest of the day, and Pinkos doesn't even have coffee at all, and the rest of the day we're either drinking water, purified water. We have an osmosis filter in the apartment. So we're either drinking water or green tea, because green tea has a lot of antioxidants in it to fight the free radicals. And we do a lot of food that's also antioxidant. And so we're on an anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, and lowering cholesterol food plan. Okay,
beautiful.
And we don't eat
beautiful.
The food that causes inflammation, and we eat a lot of food and berries and all kinds of things that fight inflammation in the body. So that's where we're at. It's really great.
Beautiful. That's well, I see that in order to defeat the free radicals, you have to become a radical yourself. You know, like this one against this one.
There you
one,
go.
And,
there you
and,
go. Better,
you have
better to be a radical about health and nutrition. Okay, so as to fight the free radicals in your body, absolutely. But
right.
you know what,
and
Don, I love all this because it's so easy for people. If they only could be educated and understand what certain things do to the body that's not healthy, what other things do to the body that's very healthy, it's a matter of education. And it's very, very easy to solve this problem. If people want to have it solved, it's very, very easy to solve the problem. And a lot of these products don't cost a lot of money. And the food, of course, you have to eat. That's fuel for the body. So these are ways to solve these problems and to not get sick to begin with. By the way, coronavirus, if someone gets it, God forbid, has many complications even after they recover from it because it does so much damage in the body. So it's not something to fool with, and it's not something for people to just kind of dismiss and say, oh, I'll never get it. Okay, it's very, very serious, this thing.
Yes, yes. Flavia, I love the presentation. We really went from soup to nuts today in today's presentation, offering spiritual nutrition, actual nutrition, and advice. And I'm looking forward to getting the link for this company with the aloe vera. I just want to mention, there are many stores in Crown Heights because we have Caribbean-based stores and we have South Korean stores that the places are not considered to be ethnic stores unless they have a section where they're selling the aloe vera plant, you know, plants. You know, they're long, prickly leaves. So I'm well aware of the, and I have in our bathroom we have aloe vera gel for skin conditioning and for sunburns. And listen, I believe it or not, we've run out of time, but we're going to move on to the next level of time. I think today's program moved at that level of velocity where time stopped and it was just this conversation. It was a very quick, potent program today. I thank you for taking the lead with the vocal baton, and how can individuals around the world connect with you going into the future?
Oh, yes, please. Use my email. I talk to people on email all day long, every day from all over the world. My email address is Yaff, Y-A-F-F, F like Friday, okay? Yaff Batya, Y-A-F-F, B-A-T-Y-A, at Yahoo.com, and that's the best way to reach me, and I'll absolutely answer, God willing, unless it goes to spam. But I also check my spam filter. So have them write to me on email, and I'll answer their questions.
Beautiful. I'd like to thank Yaffu Batya DaCosta today, who is the CEO of Ezra Lanusim Israeli Amuta. And blessed souls, we're now concluding today's program. We're going to segue out of today's program with a song called Brother, which I've played many times on the program, by a group called Zusha, which is a local band. It's a song without words, because you hear the song, which is called Brother, is you can feel the brotherly love, the sister love, the human love for each and every one of us. And I have to remind everyone, I have to be good. You have to be good. We all have to be good because the Teva Tov Laheti, which is the nature of the good, to do good, the Creator, is the source of our goodness, waits ever so patiently for us to activate all levels of goodness to share with the entire human family experience. This is Anti-Eugenics Torah, signing off, and I'm looking forward to next week, next month's program with Yafi Batei DeCosta and the rest of you. Take care, everyone. Have a wonderful week.
Oh,